Thank you, Director. My last question is something similar concerning our CalWORKS program. There's 4 months where they're working with Alameda County. Does our CalWORKS families during that time have eligibility challenges to move into our new program, like our stricter requirements?
So initially, because it is local, they won't go through the full background screening.
Okay.
They'll just do the sex registrant screening. So
okay.
We think that will not have a negative effect on them. And the CalWORKS program, I think, is longer than the 4 months, but it's just the housing subsidy that they get from the county's 4 months.
Okay.
The program, I think, is up to a year.
Okay.
So our goal is if they can successfully complete the program while they're in CalWORKS, we'll be paying a shallow subsidy to them. And then as they get closer to completing the program, they can be recommended by their case manager to come over, if we have vouchers, to be screened for a housing choice voucher. And again, lease in place, which is a great opportunity for a family who has met the requirements from the county.
And I'm sorry, I thought of one more question. Thank you so much. Remember when we were offering landlords that if they have 10 units or more, that they could come into our program? Has people been kind of...
You know, we have had probably an uptick in landlords lately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's because the market's maybe just softened a little bit.
A little bit.
I think open market landlords have to probably evict one tenant to see that we actually have a great product here. It's very expensive to evict tenants in the city of Oakland. And one of the benefits we have is that, you know, we never want to be in that situation, but we continue to pay the HAP while the owner is going through the court process. We're in a market rate, you're not getting it. If they're not paying rent, you're not getting anything. So we think by countering some of the myths and benefits, they get their rent on time. We have an excellent finance department, notwithstanding HUD's issues around when they send us the money. Mm-hmm. When we get the money, it goes out immediately. Our finance team is very responsive to owners who are calling about issues with their rent. So once you're on the program, I think that we have a good product. And many owners want to help low-income families. So we sell that as well. So we have sold out for our owner appreciation event on the 20th, and that just speaks to our landlords who want to come and be acknowledged and, you know, let us show some love to to their participation. So we're very excited about that.
Yeah, that's an exciting event. It's like our third or fourth year, right?
Ninth.
Ninth.
Wow.
Ninth year.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. One question.
Sure.
How long is it taking to find housing now with the vouchers? How long, I mean, has that...
Yeah, so I would say the average is probably somewhere around 120 to 160 days.
Really?
So about 4 months average. We have some folks who, we have been telling our families, do not move out of your unit till you find another
right,
one.
Right, right.
As people maybe start to listen to that, then people can lease up in 30 to 60 days. They're out there looking, they serve the notice, they can get the RTA completed and get moved in. But some of our families, many of them have moved out with nowhere to go and are sleeping in their cars and shelters because they accepted a payout from the landlord.
Oh my God.
You know, due to whatever circumstances they found themselves in. As Lanita talked about, the searcher workshop we think would be something that would help some of the families. But I have had vouchers on the street for 8 months to a year, and just now in the last 3 months, I've seen those families lease up. So I know something's changed. If minimally, I think that the vouchers that at least a large percentage of them were between May and March. So it tells me that maybe the market's just shifted a little bit.
Okay, thank you.
Whether that stays true or not, we will see, but I would agree with what you just said. And I did share the KQED article that we'd done some of the research with Michelle
great.
On.
I have a following question, and it's great to see all the good work that you and your department are doing. Have you experienced times when the rent has gone down, and how do you process that with your landlords?
We have not experienced that, probably in the last 5 to 6 years. Because the market is so tight, we would probably not reduce rents, contract rents. They may not get an increase, but the goal is that we try to support the tenant to stay in the unit. So we have not traditionally decreased contract rents.
Very cool. All right, well.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you
very much.
So I want to invite the director of our asset management department up. Anna Kadenovskaya oversees quite a large portfolio, actually, of our, and a mixed portfolio. It's a complicated piece of work. It's not only now contracting out management services and oversight for some public housing properties in our senior services, in our senior portfolio. Campbell Village, one of our large family sites, is also under her, in addition to all our mixed finance. So she provides technical assistance and oversight for a wide and broad, diverse group of properties and residents. And she's going to go over how we're adding to that problem for her.
And I'm here by myself. No support.
Yeah, she reports to Phil. Phil's engaged right now cutting deals in our real estate department. But carry on, Anna.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Anna Kaidanovska. I'm the director of asset management. And I'm here to talk about some of our traditional roles as well as the new initiative. When we talk about traditional roles, one of our core traditional roles is oversight of the private management company's performance. Mm-hmm. As you know, some of our sites are managed by the third-party management companies, and we'll look at how they're actually managing the site. So we'll look at the occupancy rate, the rent collection, the number of days it takes them to close the work order, the number of hours it takes them to close emergency work order. Our portfolio is pretty big, as Mr. Johnson mentioned. There's over 1,900 units, 844 of them are public housing. And for some of the sites, we're looking at the regulatory compliance just for public housing units. For some of the sites, we're looking at the overall performance. We're looking at how the sites are pacing financially, whether they're staying within the budget. We're looking at the customer service level to our clients. We typically have 98% of occupancy, as you can see in our report. The sites are also pretty good with their HUD Real Estate Assessment Center score. During the last few years, only a few of the sites scored between 80 and 90, and the rest, I think about 10 out of the 13 sites are usually higher than 90%. We also do a very extensive quality control for the public housing units. We have an asset management specialist that goes to the sites and review the files. And we do that to catch errors, to find out training opportunities for the site staff if they're making errors in some of the areas where they can improve their knowledge. And we also we know that our third-party auditors not only pull the sample of the files, they also pull the sample of the quality control files to check our knowledge of how good we are in administering the program. So for 844 units, we usually do about 8%, and our goal to go higher next year, to do about 10%. So it's like 70 files every year. We have site-specific activities and events for seniors, and these activities range from resident-led exercise club, resident-led walk club. Palo Vista, one of our very active senior sites, have a resident advisory counselor where they try to do interesting activities up to the point of generating money that they later donate to the Boys and Girls Club. Or you know, maybe a family in need. There is a dial care program, and something that you mentioned, buddy system, where there is also a senior volunteer, senior person through the dial care who makes about 60 to 70 calls a day to check on the clients at our senior sites. and it's not limited to the public housing. She actually calls Section 8 participants. And it's extremely crucial because it allows us to do the wellness checks for the families that don't necessarily quickly, don't necessarily respond to the call, and allowed us to actually involve the families and intervene and assist the residents. Something you mentioned, do we have the IHSS program? We actually opened the dialogue with the assisted waiver program, which has been successful in other cities, and as the program grows, now there's more added requirements. And this program allows to place a registered nurse and the nursing assistants at the site, so they can allow seniors to age in place. You know, for those seniors, they're unable to take care of themselves, and actually have assistance on the site level. We are, you know, I want to be very upfront, we're only in the conversational phase of exploring this program and program requirements, but as we are having this dialogue, I'll have more updates later on. We also support nonprofit boards for three of our nonprofit partners, is Tessa Ferrango Corporation, Oakland Housing Initiatives, and Keller Housing Initiatives. And we do that for a fee for two of the corporations. We do generate a little bit of income. We look at how they pace financially, how is the asset performing, and very frequently intervene and suggest strategic ways of managing the asset better. And then finally, a brand new initiative for our department is the Building Bridges SRO Transitional Share Housing. When we conceptualized this program, which is brand new program, we asked essential questions of how, why, who, where, and what, basically how we're going to do it. So the first question of how are we even able to do, how are we even able to implement this program? And we're able to implement this program is because we have MTW flexibility to fund housing programs for low-income families who otherwise would not be able to participate in the Section 8 program or public housing program for various reasons. Now, how did we accomplish that? We issued the request for qualifications, and we only invited the service-enriched provider. So we really were interested in what are the other providers there that do the services at the site or contract with other partners to make sure that this very special population is actually having access to the services. We issued the RFQ for limited housing types. One was service-enriched single-room occupancy, SRO units. The other one was shared housing set aside for veterans, emancipated youth, or other special needs. And by special needs, it's somebody who is recovering from substance addiction, people with mental disabilities, people who have been chronically homeless. And the third one is transitional housing units, again, set for veterans, emancipated youth, or other special needs population. Now, why are we doing that? We're doing that because we wanted to increase the supply of affordable housing in the city of Oakland, because we want to preserve affordable housing in our city. And the terms of this agreement is 15 years contingent on availability of funding with an opportunity to renew further. We want to utilize OHA MTW authority and resources to serve as many Oakland households as possible, because all of the properties that we're going to sign the contracts with are located in the city of Oakland. And we want to increase the availability of housing to the special need population, veterans, chronically homeless, people with mental disabilities. The next question was, well, who are we going to be partnering with? And these are our partners. Some of them have a tremendous experience in the industry and have been in affordable housing business for years. Some of them are fairly new to the table. The people that are new to the table is St. Mary's Center and Operation Dignity, but they made a very compelling proposal, and they demonstrated that they have resources and capacity to administer this program. And most importantly, they do serve the populations that otherwise would not get into the Section 8 program or public housing. Again, in terms of who, if you can see on the next two slides, and I'm not going to talk about each development of property, but I just want to mention a few. For example, Peter Babcock House is basically a five-bedroom house. It's a shared housing in North Oakland. House of Dignity, 20 out of 56 single-room occupancy units. The other units in the building are either project-based or not supported by the program. So you can see that there's a variety of configurations, there's a variety of services. Some of the partners provide services on site, some of the partners outreach and have agreements with other service providers in the area. One of our responsibilities would be to ensure that they do have services in place when we're going to provide audit of their performance. Now, where are they? They're everywhere. They're in West Oakland, they're in downtown Oakland, they're in North Oakland, and in East Oakland. And just to give you a better idea of where they are, Peter Babcock House is in North Oakland. There's four properties, and they're managed by different partners in downtown, four in West Oakland, and two in East Oakland. So we're going to be on the road very frequently to go out and look at the sites. Now, what are we going to be doing? There are a couple of the process for this program is still being worked at, and you know there's some variables that might change, but we're going to be doing modified criminal background check. We're going to be screening for registered sex offenders and methamphetamine production at the subsidized sites. In terms of income eligibility, we are not going to do the full income eligibility. We would want partners to certify that everybody that they serve are at 50% of annual median income or lower. We're going to be doing HQS inspections because we certainly don't want to subsidize the apartments, the units, the single room occupancy places that do not meet housing quality standards requirements. And our partners have been provided a list of specifically what we're looking at. We are going to issue the monthly subsidy payments for occupied units, so my team will be reconciling how many units are actually occupied during the months. We are also going to do the annual management occupancy audit, which will involve us, again, going to the sites, reviewing the files, looking at how they manage their wait list, you know, whether they're pulling people in the appropriate order, you know, whether their self-certification for income is true certification of 50% of AMI. We're definitely going to verify the services and resources. And right now we're talking about doing it annually, but maybe more during the year. And the beautiful part of this partnership is that as an Oakland Housing Authority, we can always exchange resources. If they're working with other service providers that we're not aware of, we can tap on that. We can tap on this resource and offer some resources that we have an opportunity to use. And we will have the local program assistant agreement with the provider, which one of the purposes of this agreement is for various providers to secure additional funding from the banks, from lenders and investors. So they're using the contract as a leverage to secure funding to invest in the sites and do the repairs and modifications and capital improvements that the sites were not able to do before because they had no other financial revenue or financial resource. And lastly, how are we going to support that? We restructured the department a little bit. We had six positions with one vacancy in the previous year. And we're restructuring the department to add an asset manager so we can either split the functions or the portfolio, and really would really depend on the level of expertise of the asset managers. And we're going to be using the management analysts for some data analysis for looking at the trends and for seeing how successful the program is going to be. And we're very confident that it's going to be successful. Do you have any comments or questions?
All right.
Wow. It's okay if you don't.
Like.
I
do.
I have two. I just didn't want to be first because I've been talking so much.
At the Harrison Hotel, mm-hmm. I know that, and I could be wrong, that there are shelter plus care vouchers.
There are, and there are project-based vouchers from this authority. There are shelter plus care, and now there's SRO assisted units. So it's all three.
so a mixture of all three.
Yeah, I think Michelle understands the development more than any of us, but because she's worked in both Shelter Plus Care and the project-based Section 8 that we have, because we administer Shelter Plus Care as well.
So, yes. Commissioner, we have three types of households there. We have the Shelter Plus Care project-based contract. We're going to be providing SRO, local assistance.
Yes.
And they are looking at trying to also possibly get some project-based vouchers. So you're going to have a mix of units there at the property.
Is there thinking to kind of layer that out so that it's one kind? Does it make sense
because they're
pull
different.
That money out of the Shelter Plus Care program?
Not really.
No.
Okay.
And we want to keep the services, but what they are doing, you should know, is they're part of the Empyrean redo that we are into.
So those are the two pairs.
Those two are going. They're going after funding to redo the Harrison.
I remember that.
They'll use our operating subsidy for the SROs. They'll use our project-based Section 8 for some of the units, and then Shelter Plus Care will remain, which I think is essential because we don't want to lose those units. Mm-hmm. And rehab the building along with the Empyrean. They're separate projects, but in their application, I believe, to TCAC, they're one, if I'm correct. Bill has left the building, but I think that I'm right. So.
Okay, well, thank you.
Oh.
My last question is the income eligibility for the building bridges. Is there a zero minimum? Is there a minimum income?
No minimum.
No minimum.
It's only because some folks are moving from GA or zero onto Social Security, so it's good that we're not denying those folks. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yep.
A fine job.
Excellent job.
So next on our list, we're going to talk about some innovations in our property management and a couple of new proposals. So I'm going to have Andres Manriquez come back up along with Mark Schifferall, Director of Property Management, handles all of our properties, both the two large public housing sites and 1,539 units of project-based Section 8.
Very good.
Throughout the city.
Thank you, Eric.
Good evening, Commissioners. Mark Schifferall, Director of Property Management. So we're here tonight to discuss an initiative that we've put in place to help eliminate the illegal dumping at our sites as much as we can and increase waste diversion by our tenants at the properties. That's a kind of a twofold plan. It's a citywide problem for the illegal dumping, where the city spends about $5.5 million a year in illegal dumping costs, and that increases greatly impacts our 245 properties, 1,539 units throughout the city. Our initiative is to increase diversion, educate the tenants and staff, and have a sustainable program going forward. So tonight I'll talk to you about a little bit more about the tenant outreach education plan, the waste diversion plan, and then kind of recap everything all together. Here's the map that shows our OP portfolio spread throughout the city. Deep east in the bottom right corner all the way up to North Oakland in the purple up in the left-hand corner. So currently the OP portfolio, we generate around 90,000, have the potential to generate 90,000 gallons of trash, 23 garbage truck loads of trash per week. We currently pay around $131,000 a month for just the trash recycling and organics collection services at the properties. OPI's under the franchise agreement with the city. And that does not include the illegal dumping fees and costs. That's strictly trash costs. For this upcoming fiscal year, the budget that we have in place without the waste diversion intentions is about $1.572 million just for trash services. It's actually around $2 million if you factor in all the illegal dumping costs that come into play. So why resident engagement? Well, there's three different areas that we really need to come into line with. There's the Alameda County Waste Management Authority Ordinance. And then there's the state law, AB 341. And then there's also the city's 2006 Zero Waste Strategic Plan. Now, the strategic plan for zero waste is actually very interesting. Their goal was to reduce 400,000 tons of trash through diversion and other efforts to 40,000 by the year 2020. I was looking for statistics that I could bring tonight, but I couldn't find any about how they've progressed and where they're at with that. But hopefully through our initiatives, I can actually find out some info and bring some comparisons. This is an example that we took at one of our properties to bring to you tonight, that we're trying to help educate some of our tenants. Now, I can't guarantee you that this is all tenant trash that's not being diverted or put in place. This also pairs in with our illegal dumping efforts, and I'll talk more about that later on. You know, if there's people going through the trash bins and throwing it all around, but this is kind of what our staff would go through and assist in cleaning up on a weekly basis at the properties. A lot of times this is the day of trash day too. So if somebody knows when our trash days are, they can throw things away.
So that photo we just saw there, what you're saying is that that also includes illegal dumping?
Potentially.
Yeah. Potentially. I mean, you don't know for sure in this photo, but
we have more horrifying pictures of illegal dumping in this slideshow to show you.
There's more telling pictures coming up, but this
is the tip of the iceberg.
Right, and you know, we've got reports from our tenants who call in to OHPD or they call our staff and let us know that there are neighbors that know when our trash days are, and so if their bins are full, they'll come and chop at our place. People from outside the community, and a lot of times we find when we research and look through these items, the addresses on any mail we find, it's not Oaklanders doing it to themselves, it's people from the outside a lot of times.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's a problem. You have bulky waste, you know, you set out bulky waste and the whole world will be showing up.
And this is part of the work that two nonprofits now do for OPI. One that started here, but OPI's now taken over the contracts. One is with Youth Uprising, and we use it as an employment training and experience model. And Mark and Andreas have both just finished negotiating with CEO Works, which does another area of the city that will be turned over this year of OPI portfolio, doing some of the remediation work that you're seeing with this trash.
So one more, you know, fact about this, you know, picture, Commissioner, is that, you know, one thing that we find is that we clean our properties and we have a moral obligation to do so. And by us doing it, you know, it basically attracts for others to continue to dump on our properties because they clean their, you know, property. So, you know, we find that many times instead of, you know, dumping in other areas, they will come and dump in, you know, on ours. And we have seen trash that comes for, you know, Richmond, Hayward, you know, I mean, you know, many of the surrounding communities. So it's not even Oaklanders, you know, dumping on us.
As far away as Antioch, Martinez, we've seen trash mail, things like that coming through. So part of the one initiative that we have is the outreach and education plan. So this upcoming fiscal year, starting in July, we're starting the initiative for the environmental team to go into place. And what that'll consist of is a team leader and two team members that'll do strictly outreach. And those we're actually excited to have. They're going to be Section 3 hires. So we're going to have our tenants going out talking to other tenants, which we hope and really want to have in place where they can talk to each other and then start that training session. That team leader will also be assigned to oversee the CEO Works contract, which will help us with illegal dumping. Mainly their whole focus, though, is the tenant outreach and education, recycling. They'll address any issues that we have that come to us as reports of noncompliance. We'll do outreach and start talking to tenants because we do have to come into compliance. You know, we have our moral obligation to recycle and do organics, but we also have a couple things in place that we have to follow. Environmental team will also complete our waste audits. We've started this year already. We did some visual waste audits. We also looked into what the trash bin sizes are at each property. We feel that what we currently have in place are some 96-gallon toters and some of the largest ones you have and no recycling or organics. Well, if you change that up and you have the recycling organics at properties, we can save money by lowering the toter sizes and also recycle fully and teach tenants about that. So then this team will also be responsible for the action plan So they'll be responsible for going out and finding out which sites to target, how we're going to go through the city, and how we're going to educate. They're going to be finalizing the marketing plan information, so getting the information in tenant newsletters, having events at properties, and putting out flyers and working with tenants directly. So it's a really nice direct contact, human touch kind of thing, instead of just sending out mailers in rent statements or putting them at properties where they will hopefully, if they were throwing them away, put them in recycled bins instead of in the trash. But this way, with that one-on-one touch, they'll have direct contact. So as I just said, we're looking to reduce, ideally, to the 20-gallon trash cans if we can, or 32 gallons. Maybe it's kind of a tipping point. We're going to increase the availability of recycling and compost containers at the properties and provide all the outreach to tenants on what materials should be recycled and composted, really expanding on more than just the pictures on the sides of the bins. This is more of an approach where we go out and we talk to people and follow up. We started handing out the green pails that go along with the organics. We've had some success, but we still have to do some continued follow-up. We don't want them to end up at the beach or in a play toy area. We want them to be utilized in the way that they should be. The beach of Lake Merritt. So our anticipated results with this initiative is we can, if properly followed by the tenants over the course of this plan, reduction of our weekly garbage service capacity to 49,000 gallons a week, or down to 12 garbage truck loads. That monthly garbage cost would be $85,000 a month, which is a reduction of $46,000 projected. So that is over $500,000 in projected savings in just this area, strictly for OP.
So you're going down to 12 truckloads per week.
Right.
Is that right?
From 26.
That's really ambitious.
And remind you that we're launching this in July, so it's going to take some time to get this in place. We're hopeful that it can launch quickly.
I mean, that is really ambitious.
Yes.
Well, I like ambition.
I mean, we shouldn't shoot low. We really got to get this moving. And we've got, you know, a team of three that's going to be putting this into play and working with our tenants directly. We've also got an illegal dumping team, which I'll talk about in a couple of minutes. That's going to help us on that end.
So the achievement of that goal would depend on, the one hand, illegal dumping mitigation, right?
Correct.
Right, because that's part of that.
Correct.
And then the rest of it, where's that coming from?
Well, going into the recycled bins and reducing the trash bin sizes from what we have now, like the 64 gallons, some 96s, all the way down. We reduce it down to a 32 or a 20.
In other words...
We feel by reducing the amount of trash that's at the properties just strictly in the trash bins, by placing recycling and organics and now separating everything, you can reduce the amount of trash that goes into a trash bin.
I see. This is reducing the amount of trash.
Diversion.
So you're diverse. So you also have the organics and the recycling.
Correct.
Which would be, so you might not be saving that much on trucks because they still have to haul the other stuff.
Right, but the costs go down because we wouldn't be overfilling the garbage bin, so it would be a direct reduction.
Yes, right.
In the amount of trash going.
I see, good. Okay.
And also reducing the amount that goes to the landfill, which is also good for the environment.
So currently, you know, how we pay for trash under the franchise agreement is that it's based on the size of what they collect. We could generate three times or four times the amount of recyclables or, you know, compost, and the price would not go up. So it's a flat fee for those, you know, items. So the incentive is to say to the resident, you know, reduce your trash, you know, and, you know, do the right thing. Put, you know, your compost where it belongs, your recyclables, and therefore, once you get your 96 gallon or 64 gallon to a 32 or a 20 gallon bin, then it reduces the amount of money that we have to pay.
I see. So you could grow compost and recycling, and you're not penalized?
Correct.
You grow trash, you are
penalized. It's based on the bin sizes.
Yeah.
So if you're a landlord and you don't feel like being in compliance, you'll just pay a lot for your trash bills.
Yes.
But then your tenants aren't really helping
out. That's quite an interesting incentive system.
Yes. 552,000 reasons in this presentation.
I also want to say that our tenants, particularly in Opie, there's a whole bunch of them who've expressed a real interest over the past 5 years that I know of helping reducing our waste stream. They're very actively interested in trying to help us do this. So I think mobilizing them and organizing that will help a long way toward meeting the financial goal. And the other thing is, we have to do something. And if we can improve it through this measure,
even if we don't reach
the financial outcome by the end of the first year, which we'll report on,
yes,
it's still valuable to improve the quality of life of our properties for our residents.
Totally. And for the neighbors.
Yeah. That's our goal, full neighborhood impact.
But I've always known this department to meet a challenge head on. I was curious about whether you're incorporating into the marketing plan this great app that I've actually used in the last couple of days called See, Click, and Fix. Mm-hmm. And I've actually tested it and very easily found almost dumping to take pictures of. And they send you an email that they've reported it to the city, and then they sent me an email that it was done. And so are we incorporating this software into our marketing?
Not directly See, Click, Fix, but I'll tell you some more. We've got really
good plans for
illegal dumping coming up.
The Deputy Executive Director Wells has made sure that every staff member knows how to do See, Click, Fix. It's been around for a couple of years.
Exactly.
And frequently I see her doing it, so it would
let
me know when they take care of it.
Yeah.
I can't say that I haven't reported some throughout the city when I'm driving around as well.
Good. You too? Good. I'm slow then.
So we'll talk a second about our milestones and kind of our outreach portions that we want to go through. So we'll start the recruiting for the education and outreach team in June so that we can be ready to mobilize hopefully right away in July 1. Finalize all the resident education program and materials in the first month and then report on how our efforts are going on a quarterly basis. And then for our marketing materials specifically, send the education materials to tenants regarding diversion, compliance, and bin reduction starting out in June and then quarterly from there out. And then marketing materials to tenants on a continuous basis, just specifically talking about our initiatives and reminders. And then our green bins that we've started already. We've had some site meetings with the site intervention area still under OPO. Omar Ronquillo and Shanta Ohm have gone out and done intent education already, and that's where Mr. Johnson was talking about some residents who are very interested in this initiative and really taking this on. Any questions before I jump into the illegal dumping area for the tenant education?
Are you building in any programs to involve the children? And also incentives for reducing?
So part of the education and outreach, it does involve the children at each property. I think we found for the most part that families, the children are the ones that take out the trash most often, and they try to do the skyhook into the trash bins, and a lot of times it ends up not making it. So yes, that's a direct line of communication for us, is to make sure the kids know exactly what this means and what it is. We've had discussions about what we can do to incentivize, and we're still kind of working through those. At this point, we don't have anything specific. We have been working with Stop Waste and another company called Cascadia on what they've done at other properties to help model and find site champions that will take this on. But we haven't totally worked through that process yet.
I'm wondering if you reduced to a certain milestone at each site, like maybe the site could have a pizza party or something like that.
Like a barbecue or something like
that. Yeah, or a barbecue. And I know that when the kids get educated about something, my kids really nag me about stopping smoking, so that can be quite effective.
Maybe in the newsletters we could put something out about the top sites that have reduced and really promote that heavily and have it kind of a competition. Good idea.
I have one question.
Yes.
Have you noticed any patterns among the different buildings to see if there are some that are already performing better? Do we have any information about that, just to know about maybe the culture, a little bit of what's happening at those buildings?
Not quite data-driven yet, to have that collective data piece. We have a handful of sites out there that we've started working with. We're hoping that maybe about the first quarter, if we can at least have some sort of spread out, we can start seeing some trends. But I don't think we have enough to garner any data yet that would give us some sort of structure.
I'm guessing that your own buildings will give you the most information about what works and what doesn't.
Absolutely. And actually, just by, you know, it'll fluctuate, too, with the occupancy levels of buildings, too. So we've launched into, and over the last few years, we're now up in the high 90s for the majority of the portfolio in OPI, and that's seen an increase in the trash that's generated.
Of course.
But now you are going to need a method of measuring program success here.
Right. So we'll be able to look at that by trash bills as the number one indicator that we can look at, so we can look at the trash.
Oh, I see. So that would be more of an aggregate kind of a thing, as opposed to
look at the bin sizes, see what's working, what's not. If we get overages, now we also, waste management has something they call the snapshot, where if they pull up with a garbage truck, the worker does not get out. They take a picture off the front of their truck and send us a bill for an overage if the bin top is open even like an inch or so.
They're very good at assessing any overages, so we know
it
by site and by bin.
Yeah,
we get from 200 and
right, and they're pricey. I mean, it's, and so we try our best. So our end result goal, if with the education of tenants, and if they can make sure that even if it's not their bin, if it's their neighbor bin and it's sitting up a little bit, you know, if we can just move everything along so that everything.
No, because I think what Commissioner Griffith was just pointing out it would be, I mean, that sounds to me like it would be important, because if you get, you know, usually everything doesn't succeed at once.
Right.
You know, it's certain things succeed more than others, and then you go, okay, what can we learn from what's succeeding? Why is that happening?
Right.
And then.
Yeah, our best indicator will be our tenants of what's working and what's not in trash days. I mean, we're talking about everything going into, do you want to put the bins out the night before or the morning of trash day? Because we're finding out that a lot of times if we put the bins out the night before, then they end up having extra trash in them by the next morning, and then we get the overage charges. So we're trying to, you know, we'll find that medium, and actually different areas of the city will probably have different initiatives and different points because it's not all one conducive plan.
So on my street, I always have less trash because of all the street recyclers. So that doesn't happen across the city, because they come and get all the good stuff.
They get the
good stuff. And if you look at the mess that we saw that first bin, that was probably caused by people going through the bins to get
looking for recyclables when they're not.
A lot of them are very respectful, though.
And I know that there's someone who comes by our property and is where I live, and she's very respectful, and I totally agree with that. There are places where they're not, though.
I see. Okay.
So next speaking topic is to talk about illegal dumping. And this is a large problem in Oakland. As you can see from the pictures, the city spends about $5.5 million a year on illegal dumping throughout the city of Oakland. And the city of Oakland's call center received about 29,370 calls between fiscal 2015 and 2016. Just for some more statistics. We have illegal dumping at our properties. We average about 31 tons of refuse per month to the waste management Davis Street transfer station down by the airport. We take about 11 tons a month to the Berkeley transfer station, 10 tons a month to an off-site dumpster, which is just down the street from our service center, and about 10 tons per month go into a compactor. The challenge that we have with this is these are all items that really could be diverted, and that's one of our initiatives that you'll see with the illegal dumping assessment from our end. All these items go directly into the landfill. They don't get separated. They don't go down to Davis Street and get, you know, the recycling taken out. They all go straight out to the Livermore area. And they cost us a lot of money to do that. So here's a couple, here's an example of some of the items that are dumped at one of our properties that our staff actually has to go out and clean up.
Jesus.
So just some more, for some more statistics for Oakland. They had 40 cases of illegal dumping where $141,000 in fines were dropped, $165,000 sent to collection agents, and they only actually collected $64,000 worth of paid fines in their program that they have for the city. They waived almost $200,000 in settlements. All of that comes from the approximate $700,000 in fines that were assessed. So they're only really collecting $64,000 in fines. So
only getting like 10%.
Right. So the city of Oakland actually, we've encouraged our residents to work through, and they can call the city's number when they see somebody illegal dumping. But the problem is they have to see who does it. They have to have the license plate. Then when they report it, they can get a reward, but they only get the reward if the person pays the fine.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So no one really, once people started looking into that and reporting and then finding that out, that our tenants have just stopped kind of doing the policing for it.
Well, and unfortunately, a license number alone won't cut it.
It's, you got to see the driver and link it.
You've got to have, you have a positive identification of the driver or you're dead in the water.
Right.
We've caught a bunch of people who got their license numbers, but it doesn't.
And just by comparison, so I'll talk to you more about our illegal dumping plan, but the Keep Oakland Clean and Beautiful Division of Public Works, they have 38 workers, 4 garbage compactor trucks, 3 flatbed trucks, and an overhead loader as part of their initiative to combat illegal dumping when the calls come in.
Overhead loader.
They're actually looking to increase their fleet to haul away dump trash and hire 5 more crew members. So they're really putting a lot of resources into that effort, but they're not really getting the return. So for our initiative, what we're looking at doing is taking it on ourselves and kind of having our own impactful effort. We're funding an illegal dumping response team. We have an OPI-focused work order system through our call center where our tenants can call and let them know that there's been illegal dumping at their property, and we'll dispatch a team that will take care of it right away. This way, it's a real good plan where we can track on a very specific system. It's only focused on illegal dumping and tracking in the system. It's outside of our OHA business operating system. So we can get metrics. We can see where the targeted sites are. If there's more frequency, we can start partnering up and monitoring properties, maybe put some cameras up and try to figure out what's happening at these sites. And if there is actually days where they're being targeted. And one of the most exciting parts for us is that we're gonna have a reconfigured waste diversion area. That sounds like a really fancy plan. I'll show you some more pictures of that after here. So the team structure that we've got that we're putting into place, Anders Lee, our Assistant Director of Property Services, will be overseeing an environmental waste and recycling manager. They'll provide direct oversight of the 2 team members that are going to go out to the properties and work with our tenants, the environmental waste and recycling coordinators, which are the Section 3 hires that we'll have out there. Center for Employment Opportunities has an illegal dumping removal contract with us. So they're the ones that will be responding directly to all the work orders that come through. It comes through on their smartphones, so they can open it, close it, take pictures, see what they find, and we can start looking into what the issues are. Kind of our own virtual C-click fix, per se, but better. So our trash diversion area, what we've currently got in place, went to D3. It's a company that has the mattress recycling contract. And we, instead of taking mattresses every single time we see one at a property and you take it to the dump and it's around $60 to $70 to drop it off, we've actually got a trailer that will now hold 70 mattresses. And it costs us $150 a month. And we get a lot of mattresses, which is odd because you pay a fee when you buy a mattress. You get the mattress recycling fee. We've stopped thinking about all the different avenues of why we see the mattresses on the side, so we just have our own mattress recycling trailer. I've color-coded these to kind of show our recycling area and then what areas would go into the landfill and then some green waste. And this will all be part of our diversion area over at 1180 25th Avenue. We'll have a specific area. We currently have a specific area for hazardous materials e-waste, but the biggest area that we'll be putting together is one specifically for metals, one for bulky items, one for appliances, one for landscaping food waste, and then one for the items that need to be compacted and sent to the landfill because they can't be diverted. We're creating our own whole area where we're separating out everything.
Oh, you're doing the separating.
We are doing the separating in an effort to eliminate the diversion and eliminate the costs of gas, insurance, staff time to go to the dump.
So what we when they say trash diversion area, you have to set up a physical place in which you can separate your trash into valuable recyclable materials and that which has to go to the landfill. And it's called diversion because what you're trying to do is divert as much of the trash going to the landfill into other recyclable areas. And so what Mark has done working with his folks and some consultants is figure out where we can do it, where we're going to stage it, and how we're going to keep things from going to the landfill and divert them back to recyclable materials. And that's called trash diversion. You're diversioning.
So, I mean, does this stuff all just start out in just a pile somewhere?
Yes. Yeah.
And then you got people out there sorting it out?
It starts
and you're
out.
You're going to have dead animals in there and
you could.
All kinds of crazy
It starts
stuff.
Out like this, this
I
slide.
I really thought of that.
So if you go back to the slide that I just put up, this is what it starts out at our properties.
Yeah.
So if you think on a larger scale, the same thing that we're doing to educate the tenants and reducing their bin sizes and recycling and organics at the site level, we are going to take on the initiative, because it is such a problem in the neighborhoods, take it on and divert it ourselves for all the illegal dumping.
Now, do you understand that you're actually creating a skill set here which can enable you to compete with waste management?
Well, we're using
we don't want to be in competition with waste management. We would be much better.
So
back to the slide for the diversion. Commissioner, do you have a question?
I think it's incredible the thoughtfulness that you have put into this, and to actually take this on is really, really, like, incredible. But none of these reports have, like, dollars, and this is a budget meeting, so I'm curious to see how much.
We're getting to those.
Okay.
I have some more dollars for you. We get excited with the pictures and the workflow.
I guess so, okay.
Yeah, one more picture for you.
So this is actually, I did an overlay with how we're going to set up the diversion area. And
this parking lot is at the service center where OHAPD is, and you'll see a trailer there. We have current staff there from CID, Williams Unit, housed there. Once we finish renovations in this building, we'll actually lose that trailer and have that space as well.
So the idea is to have a workflow where the trucks can drive in and they can offload onto each individual bin area, and then on their way out they drop it into the compactor and it's done.
So
hopefully,
they must,
which is minimal
it
amounts.
In the field.
They're separating out as they drive around the corners and everything goes in as planned. Make it very efficient.
You are so smart. Yeah, very smart.
We have a lot of smart people that helped put all of our plans together. So our targeted diversion that we're looking for, right now, currently, as of now, it's zero diversion, so we're about 744 tons. We do have an aggressive plan, and we've actually applied for a grant through Stop Waste. We'll hear about that next month. Very good organization. We met with them. They've been very helpful also. A 75% reduction in our diversion is not outside the limits based on what we're planning and how we're putting this whole thing together for illegal dumping. With all the bins and the specific area and partnering and the work order system, that's not outside of any sort of planning. It won't be immediate. We'll have to work through it, but I think that we'll see some significant results right away. So here's our anticipated cost savings. If we reduce down into 32-gallon containers,
what do we currently have?
It's kind of a mix. We've got 64s, a couple of some 96s. There was no real rhyme or reason to why waste management would drop bins, and they would call tenants and ask them what they wanted. So we've actually changed that so that they can only get different bin sizes or change them by calling OHA.
Uh-huh.
So no more reaching out to say, do you want a bigger bin? And they say yes, especially in the franchise agreement where it costs us extra funds. It's a very, very good speaking topic. So if we reduce down to 32-gallon containers at the properties, the reduction of waste container overages and backyard pickup fees, that would give us a projected savings of $700,000. If we reduced to the 20-gallon containers, it would give us projected savings of $1 million.
These are what time frame?
And this would be optimum rollout. So this would mean full portfolio running, operating with these gallon sizes for a real year, for an actual year.
For annual savings.
Yes.
Well, this is so innovative. I already want to scale it across the nation and get the award that I know is coming. So this is amazing.
And here's some milestones for the illegal dumping initiative. So we've actually finalized our work order system to report illegal dumping. We're just working through getting it implemented with our call center. We're training the OPI staff on effective use of the work order system, probably coming up right away. And I'm hoping we can beat this a little bit end of June for a July rollout, but probably July is more of a realistic time frame. Then we can start tracking the location and volume of illegal dumping as soon as the work order system is out there and if people are using it and calling in. And then we can do a quarterly assessment is our game plan. Probably in the first quarter, we would look on a continuous basis to see if we're actually getting calls and it's being utilized, so we know if we have to increase marketing at which properties and what areas of the city.
So you're expecting to have this site all set up by July?
Yes, we've actually been talking with Waste Management, and it's coming down to ironing out the details and making sure we have the space, working with CID and OHAPD, who also occupy that space, being respectful of all areas of that parking lot.
It's incredible.
So the trash diversion area, as you saw, we've kind of finalized a diversion area site plan. Now it's a matter of getting with Waste Management to find out the best route of how to put those in place. One of the exciting parts, too, is that the landscaping area shouldn't cost us any much of anything, if anything at all, because they will take that landscaping debris, recycle it, and make it into ground cover wood chips. They'll just chip it all up, mm-hmm. and then they'll resell it. So now we'll actually save money where they charge you now to dump there. Deliver all the materials necessary in month one. So by July, in July, we're hoping to have dumpsters in the whole area set up. And then training staff on effective use of the area in that July rollout so they can walk through.
So now, were these things just started last year in June, or are those dates actually 2017?
We started working on our diversion area site plans. It's been in the works for about a year. So we finalized, and now we're just working through with Waste Management. This has been a
Nothing
work
happens
in progress.
Quickly. Like
no, no, I understand. I'm just trying to get a sense because I look at here and I see 2016, month one.
Right.
I'm like, we're done.
Month one is this coming fiscal year.
Oh.
Is this one. But we started working on these two initiatives about a year ago. It's been a full year in progress getting the systems in place, making sure we roll out effectively.
They haven't implemented. Okay. So month one is the first month of
implementation. Correct. Month one of implementation.
And do you need any startup funding that's located in this year's
Hopefully
budget?
We're going to approve that on the 22nd. And we're going to approve that on the 22nd.
Approve it so it's not in the
It includes the
budget.
Staffing and support to get this
It is in this year's request.
Yeah.
It is in this year's
yes.
request. And how much is that?
Just over $500,000 for all the initiatives put together.
To get it all set
To get
up.
For the cost savings.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that should come back to us quickly.
Correct.
And are you selling any e-waste or anything? Is there any income coming back to us?
We're hoping that we can negotiate the sales of the metals and the other diverted areas.
Yeah, the metals
areas,
and the e-waste and computers.
Trying to ask Waste Management for
we have
to purchase items is a kind of a feat in itself.
Because if I understand this right, Mark, what we're doing is really trying to bank the reduction in waste and reduction of the size of the container savings should three times the savings of implementing
Correct.
The program once it's implemented. And we'll see where we are next year. But I think it's really an amazing piece of work that Mark and Andreas have done in terms of talking to the different providers. And one of the things we had a month ago, was the waste management contract. And that we negotiate our own contract for certain sites, meaning the large sites, because they're not in the franchise if we don't want them to be. And that itself was a year and a half.
Right.
torturous negotiations, and I just was enormously pleased at the reduction in costs that they were able to accomplish. It came before the board, but we really didn't pull it and discuss that in too much depth. Waste management, if you recall, was here as well, so we had to be somewhat cognizant of that. But I was, it's very few times that people go up against negotiating a trash contract with someone like waste management and end up walking out the door with anything that benefits them, because waste management negotiates these contracts 365 days a year. They know every loophole. They know how to add every add-on. Mm-hmm. And you end up in a really dangerous position. And I think the most recent bidding of the city for the franchise agreement is only an example of how you can get yourself into some serious trouble if you don't early on get some experts at the table.
Oh, it's true. It's true. I hope we document every phase of this, because we're the only housing authority that's about to attempt this, right?
I don't know anyone that has our problem.
I mean, this is really good.
So I would safely say that I'm aware of, because we have so many sites and scattered sites dependent on small recycling situations. The large sites are not the problem. Large multifamily sites are not. It's the small ones that are just really a challenge.
For your tracking part, we've got a very good financial analyst, Jonathan Young, that's been essential in helping us put this together and track it all along the way. I'm confident that we'll be able to have a lot of data that we can produce.
We did look around to other different housing authorities, but the problems that other housing authorities face are very different from the ones here in Oakland. I mean, here it's very, very unique. It just so happens that it's so expensive to dispose of trash that it has created a problem for us as a community.
Wow.
Yeah.
Actually, I have a question about that. I'm wondering if there's a way in capturing that data and holding that data, if just because this is such a significant challenge, and I think we'll always be fighting upstream unless there are some structural changes that occur, wondering if there's a way in which some of that data that's being collected can be used to support either the city in future negotiations for different franchise agreements, and or if there's other ways that this data can be used to create some different collaborations that can kind of move beyond where we are.
Yeah, one of the ideas of having a person that is directly responsible for this is precisely that, to document everything that is happening out there. When we see all that is being, the trash that is being generated, we have been able, through Jonathan and through our staff, we have been able to really capture some, numbers out there that they're very wide opening. So there's a way that we can, make that happen.
I'll just say that I think that this is an equity question and mm-hmm. something that we might want to loop our new director of equity for the city in too, because I think it is much bigger than this. So thank you.
Well, one of the challenges you have is in the franchise agreement, mm-hmm. you get an amount per unit allocated that you can call in for illegal dumping. One of the challenges that we found is that we could call it in, they have a day or so to respond, but by the time they get there, it's multiplied 10 times.
But your equity point is really valid in terms of where this occurs and how it's responded to. And I think that maybe we can provide some insight, since we have properties across the entire city in the multifamily neighborhoods. I also just want to point out, Jonathan, if you want to raise your hand, everyone has been helping with the budget and helped with this initiative and capital improvements, and that's who face behind his name, so you know who he is.
Yeah. So far, as of today, the amount of trash that we have, collected, that goes, what Mark was referring to our allowance, is around half of the trash that we're taking, to the dump. So right now, that's where it stands. But I think that as we go further, it will enhance more how we collect the information. And for that, when we take trash to Davis, basically they weigh the vehicle, but they have kind of like a minimum fee that they charge us. So if you were, let's say, taking a big screen TV that generally would be an inexpensive item, they end up charging us a flat fee of like $35. But then with all the surcharges, it goes up to like $85. So even though it's a small load, it really costs us a lot. So by us controlling the amount of items that we're taking, then we can make more sense of what really, you know, we can get credit, you know, for.
Well, that's part of the reason we have so much illegal dumping.
Right.
That's correct.
I mean, if you go, I mean, these are just obscene prices for dumping.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean.
And that's why everyone's dumping on our properties and all over town, because it becomes so expensive to dispose of anything.
That's the
nobody
equity
does it
issue.
Properly. We also don't have, we're not able to call and put bulky items on the curb and have them picked up. And I think that's another big weakness in the system. And it becomes more astounding when you realize we pay more for trash in this city than anyone I know. Anyway, I want to thank Mark and Andreas and Jonathan Young for putting
thank
this together. Community. Really appreciate it. I think it's a great proposal.
That was very illuminating. Something I never would have thought of.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So next, we're going to bring up William Bailey, who's the Director of Capital Improvements, just to walk through some of the things we're doing in terms of the money that we're investing in our property. We invest a great deal of money in our portfolio every year out of both income and MTW reserves that we have, that we save to do things. We also have the project list that we'll talk briefly about when we get to our reserve schedule at the end. One of the things I want to, and we'll go through what we're currently doing in capital improvements. In terms of some of the other things in the reserve schedule I handed out, it does have a project list with some dollar amounts. Those are subject to real estate negotiations, so we'll talk about those in closed session. But we wanted to give you the ballpark figure so we knew what we were anticipating holding. That's not what we're talking about here, is why I'm bringing it up. That's actually in Phil's shop, and we'll do that. We'll talk only about the aggregated number of the total. I don't want to talk about the individual projects. I don't want to give an idea from our partners of what we think the deal is going to cost.
Yeah.
Having said that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Bailey, who can walk us through a couple of slides.
Good evening, commissioners. How are we? Can you hear me?
Yep. Speak right into it.
Oh. Commissioners, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
All right. Well, good evening. William Bailey, Director of Capital Improvements. For our projects, as our director has already said, on our PVV renovations, that's across the OP portfolios, we'll be doing renovations to the properties themselves, and that is the unit rehabs, the building painting, exterior roofing, gutters, tree removal, sidewalk and repairs, and on. As far as our administrative IT upgrades and the vehicles, pretty much that's the Yardi, the Laserfish, the phone, new phone systems that we have, and the vehicles, including the police vehicles as well.
And I would note on the police vehicles in this budget, we did cut back some of the vehicles that were scheduled because we didn't want the expenditure given the current climate. We're a little worried, and our vehicles are mostly in good shape because of the investment we made. We do have a couple. We are holding back on some police units because they're in good enough shape, and we may come back next year if the world changes and ask to increase that. But they all come out of the capital fund because they're capital investments with the cars. Administrative and IT, I would just mention as an aside that we are currently negotiating, would be one word, the other one could be arguing, with Yardi, our IT systems, who are trying to move us to the cloud. I have some concerns in the contract. We want to go to the cloud. I don't want to state that we don't. But we want to make sure we go to the cloud in the way that most protects our data and our residents. And so we're currently, and have been since January, by the way, in some very sort of lengthy disputes with that company and looking at other options if we can't resolve them.
So does that mean we're moving the data?
I never want to do another implementation of a new software in my career, and it looks like we may have to if I can't resolve this. And we'll get into that at another meeting. I just want you to know that there's going to be some investment in that. They have Yardi 7 is in the cloud. Yardi 6 is what we host on our server. Our server is locked down. You can't get access to it from the outside. It's secure. We have concerns over their inability to guarantee security and mostly to ensure us against their negligence. So I'm fine with taking, and we will get insurance to protect us regardless, and we have it on our side. It's not that expensive. What we're really asking Yardi to do is to do the same on their side if there's any data breach that, and the language is just not acceptable to me, so we are pushing back hard. We are the furthest along of the MTW agencies. Fresno, although not an MTW agency, has already gone live, and staff went and visited their site, and I've had conversations with Preston, their executive director. They went live not necessarily resolving my problems, but I do know San Bernardino refused to sign, and we're not going to be alone in the world, and I don't want to call other PHAs that we talked to out that are further behind us, but we're sharing information. And most recently in MTW's conference that we have with all the MTW agencies, there was actually a breakout group of IT that we participated in, and Tracy and I have been working closely to try and negotiate with them, and Jennifer's providing her advice and is involved in those discussions. They're not the most pleasant thing in the world, but we will one way or another resolve this. We have 2 years left on the current six contract, and if we can't get a resolution now, we will quickly go to Plan B.
But is there a competition that could give us what we want?
No. Okay. There's really only three providers that you can choose from. And we chose Yardi because they are an integrated program. They mix the financials and the business end of housing management and affordable housing. They're the only ones who do that.
Right.
So we'll then have to go to a bifurcated system again where we have our financials being run through some other program. And we don't like that. Personally, we've had huge reconciliation issues over the years with multiple kinds of programs. We've had emphasis, and we didn't want to continue with them. We switched to Yardi. The last one is 10MAST, which King County Housing Authority has switched to. It was traditionally thought to be really good product for smaller housing authorities. They're the largest that have implemented it, and so we tend to go talk to them a bit before we make any decision. But I wanted just to let you know that in advance as part of the budget consideration. And now we can move on to the administrative budget, repairs and renovations.
We can, as we move forward, our administrative, as Mark has already said, one of the big things we're doing on administrative is the service center. We have a big roofing project with the police and CID is housed. So we'll be doing that renovations along with some of our other admin buildings. Out at Lockwood Garden, we have our administrative building there, and Peralta 935 Union. We'll be doing a lot of lobby door modifications and other administrative projects. As well, and last one, other public housing major repairs, roofing, that's also Lockwood and Peralta, and just the public housing units themselves.
And the public housing repairs include, I think, Pella Vista, some elevators, and also some handicap accessible doors at our East District office and West District office. And those are routine capital repairs, but they add up. The administrative building repairs include this building, which is we're trying to completely revamp. As you can tell by the HVAC, it does need some help. And this room has been done, but we were going to do across the hall and upstairs. We should be able to accommodate a big chunk of our administrative staff in this building once it's redone, in a way that is not overcrowded and miserable, I would also say. Right now, that's too much space devoted toward hallways, no natural light, and we're trying to fix all of that. So William's team will be taking that on. Next door, we've already got it vacated, cleaned out. We have it ready to go. They're going to do some testing. We expect demolition to start during the summer, and then the build back, which isn't that elaborate. But I think once we get it done, it's going to be a huge benefit to the rest of our staff. You were all gracious enough to give us a new building next door, which has dramatically improved, by the way, I think the way our staff feel about working every day and the way our participants feel about coming to see us. So it makes a difference.
Commissioners, our next one is roof replacement. In May of 2016, we brought to the board of Garland a roofing contract, which was a cooperative agreement to continue to improve our infrastructure. And with that, since that program has started, we've had 12 roofs completed. We have 8 of them scheduled for this year, and this is across the Opie portfolio. And not only is this roofing program a good program, what it does for us is we have a report from each stage of the project, from the tear off through the inspection and steps of the replacement. We have copies of the warranties, and there are completion inspections done with a sign off in our file. So the program we have, we feel that has been a very proactive approach to working on our infrastructure.